Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shape Daily Live. It's Brendan Schaefer here with you. It is Tuesday evening, April 2nd, 2024. Cardinals with a 5-2 win over the San Diego Padres tonight. Excited to get into a conversation talking about a 500 baseball team. The Cardinals win their first series of the season, and they climb back into 500. My gosh, how long has it been since the Cardinals have been at a 500 record, with the obvious exception of the 0-0 record that they had to begin this season? It's been a hot minute. I don't have the exact date on hand. Maybe somebody in the live chat will know the answer to that. But make sure you get your live chats in. Let me know what stood out to you from tonight's Cardinals game. I'll tell you what stood out to me. It's the starting pitching on one end, where Miles Michaelis has a much more solid start than he did game one against the Dodgers. We've now seen the Cardinals go one turn through the rotation. We talked about Gibby last night on B-Shape Daily. Wasn't a live stream, but you can go back on the YouTube page and make sure to find that video if you want to hear us talk about the Kyle Gibson start. That was big. That's the kind of tone-setting start this rotation really needed. Seven innings, two runs. Well, Miles Michaelis, despite really not being super sharp, I thought, early on in the outing on Tuesday, he was able to still get the Cardinals a quality start. Six innings, two runs, both earned, four strikeouts, seven hits allowed, a walk allowed. There were some pitches early in this game that Miles Michaelis made that weren't particularly sharp, I thought. You know, when he gets into those two-strike counts, you really would like to see him bear down with the location. And on some of them, look, you can say it's soft contact. You can say, oh, it's just an example of the opposing offense hitting it where they ain't, which you'd like to see the Cardinals do perhaps more often. But I think when the pitches are hittable, that's what guys are going to do to it. It's not always when you make a mistake location and give them something to hit in the middle of the plate. They don't always have to hit it for a home run for it to have been a less than desirable pitch. I felt like the Padres were doing a little bit of that on Michaelis early on, but he really did find a way to settle into this game. 6-2. That is the blueprint for how the Cardinals can succeed this year, especially if they get a little bit of contribution from the offense. Like, we've seen it now 2 days in a row where you put up five or six runs and you get a starting pitcher that gets you through six or seven. That's going to make life so much easier on your bullpen, especially when those pitchers are allowing only two runs like Michaelis did tonight and like Kyle Gibson did last night. I thought the swing by Wilson Contreras was an absolutely monumental moment in this game. I don't think that's telling anybody something they didn't already know, but it felt a little sleepy. Didn't this game tonight feel a little bit sleepy as you were able to get the run in the third inning? We could talk about manufacturing it the way that they did with Victor Scott, who can turn a single into a double without stealing the base. He just does it within the confine of the hit itself and runs on Tatis Jr. and finds a way to get to second base. He is so fast. And then you play a little small ball to get the run home. Again, let me know in the comments what you thought about that move, whether they should have been bunting him over and then going with the sac fly, which, credit to Ciani for getting the bunt down, credit to Mason Winn for executing the sac fly and manufacturing that run. But that early in the game, are you maybe looking for more of a crooked number opportunity that you basically take away by giving away free outs? The bunt, even though it was executed by the player that was asked to do it in Michael Ciani, it is a free out that you are basically saying, hey, Padres, here you go. You don't have to try to get us out. We're going to let you do it. I understand that it was very situational. It ended up working out exactly the way the Cardinals had hoped that it would. However, with the top of the order coming up at that point, do you sacrifice the potential early in a game for a crooked number, for a multi-run inning? And what's the trade-off there, and is it worth it? I think that's a fair conversation, especially when you consider the idea that Victor Scott can steal third base on his own. He doesn't need help. You could take the training wheels off. And I don't know if I didn't vet this stat, but somebody in my group chat had it that Yu Darvish has given up a pretty high rate of stolen bases, as had the catcher Campusano for San Diego. So I'm not 100% sure. Like I said, didn't vet that. Somebody else might know better. But that's just an interesting stat to know, is like, all right, if they are maybe a little more susceptible to giving up stolen bases, and you have a guy who stole 94 of them last year in the minor leagues, let's let that guy have an opportunity. I'm not sure what people think about that. Obviously, it worked out in the third inning for the Cardinals to score that run, but maybe you would have been able to get some more. The fact that you didn't, and then Michaelis gives one up in the fourth, it's kind of sleepy through those middle innings until Wilson wakes everybody up. Two-run home run in the sixth inning, then it's like, okay, you go into the mode of suddenly you're thinking, what can this team do here to ensure that they don't blow this lead? How does how do the latter innings have to play out? Michaelis has to get the shutdown inning in the bottom of the sixth. He does that. Who's going to pitch the seventh, eighth, and ninth? The Cardinals figure out, hey, we've got a relatively rested bullpen because of the way things were handled yesterday. We're going to go right back to Ryan Helsley for the ninth inning because he only threw, what was it, six pitches in the game last night, 13 of them today. He's probably going to get the day off tomorrow afternoon, but man, was it well earned. Ryan Helsley, I know, had the little bit of a hiccup in the Dodgers series, but I think he's going to have a very fine season for the Cardinals as the primary closer for this team. Gio comes in, does a nice job. I think Kittredge is going to have a really solid year. It's funny how fickle these bullpen things can be, but day-to-day we look at it and go, well, is the bullpen good? Is it bad? What are we thinking? Shoot, man. The last couple of nights make you feel pretty good about the bullpen, doesn't it? So here's the deal. I'm going to take a sip of my water and begin going into your questions in the live chat. Again, you got to be a subscriber to chat, but would hope that you join anyway because it's free to subscribe. And there's not even like a membership thing that I offer at this point in time, maybe down the road. But for right now, subscribe. That way you're able to comment and you won't miss any of the videos we do this season, whether it's live streams like this one, whether it's doing just a podcast that you can listen to throughout your day. We recap hopefully all the Cardinals games. It is called B-Shafe Daily when we do it. Today it's B-Shafe Daily Live because we are live with you. Hit like on this video. That's the one thing that I will ask. 17 of you have already done it. Hopefully some more of you will. Maybe we can get those likes up to 25 or 30 real quick. And let's see how high we can get it to go during the course of the stream. I'm going to take the drink of water that I promised because I don't want to start sounding like Chip Carey within the next few seconds if I don't get this hydration. And that was a small joke. I thought Chip Carey, here's the deal. I will address that right off the top because I know that's something that everybody noticed when they tuned into Bally Sports Midwest for the game. Chip Carey was playing hurt, right? The voice was not kind to him today. Obviously, a little sick, whatever's going on, but was a trooper, was battling through, and I really appreciate that. I know some people would say, oh my gosh, you know, just take the night. And I kind of thought, yeah, I'm surprised he's not taking the night. But man, if that's your job, if that's your livelihood, you want to be in that seat and you want to be taking part. But I thought it was really smart what they did. Brad Thompson took on a little bit more of the load, and Jimmy the Cat Hayes was able to join the booth as well and take on a bit of a different role tonight, which I thought was a lot of fun. I thought everybody did a great job. And then, man, Brad Thompson really kept accumulating more power as the game went along. He's calling strikeouts in the ninth inning of a save situation. It's like, Brad, put that on the highlight reel, my friend. No, it was good. It was fun. And I thought, man, does Chip Carey have a great sense of humor on the Wilson Contreras home run call. The Cardinals tweeted the full video of it, and so if you missed it, you can go scroll the Cardinals timeline where they just put speechless in the caption of that video because Contreras hits the homer and Chip gives his call, but then he kind of lays out for a good number of, 4 or 5 seconds, whatever it was, because again, he didn't have much of a voice tonight. And Brad chimes in and says, Chip, I couldn't have said it much better myself. Well, man, and then says whatever he said about the home run. And then without missing a beat, Chip goes, yeah, you could have. And I think I even heard the cat giggling in the background. I know what the cat's laugh sounds like, and I think that might have been it. So that was a lot of fun, too. So all in fun when I say I'm going to take my sip of water, too. But, man, it really, when you think about, and I just do these stupid podcasts, like I don't hold a candle to anything that Chip Carey is doing on a nightly basis throughout the baseball season, calling a game for 3 hours. I mean, which tonight was like 2.5 hours. Thank you, by the way. 8:40 start time. If that game goes 3 hours, I don't think we're able to do a live stream, but we're able to get it done because it went pretty quick. But nevertheless, yeah, your voice is going to go at times. And like I said, I don't do what he does, but I can even understand from doing radio and doing podcasts and stuff like that. If you don't take care of it, that can happen. And if you're sick, good luck. Like, there's nothing you can do about it when you get sick. So I just wanted to start off by giving credit to Chip for being a trooper. And then we're going to read Brett's comment here because he was kind enough to throw me a super chat. Brett mentions that Crawford may not be long for the team because when Edmund gets back, I want to see him back up shortstop at this point. Scott cannot leave center field. Here's the thing about that, though. The reason that Crawford was brought in, knowing that they had Victor Scott in the minors potentially ready to come up soon, was because they wanted Edmund to not have to be the backup shortstop. Now, did they at the time anticipate that Victor Scott could be an everyday center fielder right now in the big leagues and could take that job and run with it? You know, perhaps not. I think at the time before they signed Crawford, I was thinking outside the box a little bit like that and saying, well, if you're going to have these roles, what about a Thomas Sagesi? Like, what about some of these other guys that could maybe mix in and you could find a way before they went and committed to Brandon Crawford? But once they did that, I mean, they gave him a couple million bucks, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember the exact reported salary, but it's not nothing. And so I just think that's there are other moves that are going to be made certainly before that one. And Brandon Crawford, by all accounts, has been, you know, doing what the Cardinals have asked of him. Just because you don't see him much doesn't mean that they're not going to be satisfied as a team with his performance and with what he brings to the table as essentially protection for Mason Winn in that spot. So, Brett, I really do appreciate the super chat there. I don't agree with the premise, though. I think Brandon Crawford, his spot is certainly safe for a little while. And, right, if you get into June, July, and you start to be able to really evaluate the performance and there are other questions going on, maybe something changes on that front. I'm not going to say it lasts forever, but I don't think we've seen really a sample to know whether he's been doing a good job or a bad job, right? It's just been like one game that he's gotten a chance to play. And I do understand the premise of the point as it pertains to Victor Scott, because I think he should be the center fielder for the foreseeable future as well. How long that lasts when you start to get guys coming back healthy is a fair question. We don't know when Tommy Edman's coming back healthy. That's the first thing I'm going to start with. I know he's supposed to have maybe an MRI later this week, perhaps Wednesday, I think it was, to add some clarity, hopefully, to what his timeline could look like and maybe if there needs to be some sort of other intervention to address the wrist or if it's going to be healing properly the way they wanted to on its own. But all that being said, right now, the way I at least mentally categorize the Tommy Edman situation is anything you get from him in the first half of the season is a bonus. If he's back sooner than that, fantastic. But I think mentally, as you're kind of mapping out this roster, that's at least the way I'm looking at it, right? I think Lars Nupar is going to be back imminently. There was a bit of a scare when it was reported because Memphis had put up the lineup, I guess, inadvertently gotten it wrong, said that Lars Nupar in his rehab assignment was playing center field tonight. He wasn't. He was in left field. I think if he had been in center field, that is something to pay attention to because for as much as we do like what Victor Scott is doing right now, his batting average, even after a game tonight where he reached base with that double, and man, was that fun to watch him fly around first base, not even hesitate for a moment, take second, and run on Tatis Jr. the way that he did.
But Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What I was getting at is his average is still 136, right? He's got an OPS below 500. So the traditional statistics, it is only a six-game sample size, but it is kind of, you know, lacking in terms of, well, it's a low batting average, not powerful, things like that. I think if you're watching these games, though, you're pretty satisfied with the way Victor is handling himself. I don't subscribe to the idea that he's overmatched. He's going to strike out just like everybody else on the team is going to strike out. The Cardinals, through the first five games, had, I want to say it was 56 strikeouts through five games. So those aren't all Victor Scott II, right? He's got a handful of them, but those aren't all from him. And that's why I'm kind of looking at that going, I'm not going to nitpick this guy for striking out when basically everybody else in the lineup is doing it a lot too. He's making good contact when he does make contact. And we know that when he gets on base, there are things that he can do that other people cannot do. So for me, Victor Scott is a guy that I want to see get some run. To his credit, Michael Ciani did a nice job tonight as well. But when Lars Nootbaar returns, obviously there's not going to be playing time for both. And Ciani has already kind of been getting squeezed. Tonight was his first opportunity. You like what he can do defensively. I mentioned that he laid down the bunt when he was asked to do so early in the game. There were some good things that he did. But if I were making a roster move decision, I'm basically keeping Victor Scott. Going to wait and see what it looks like for Dylan Carlson and Tommy Edman. When one of those two come back, then you can maybe evaluate. But there is an extra gear to what Victor Scott brings to the table that I would hope the Cardinals would not overlook in the near future as it pertains to his presence on this roster. All right, we're going to rock and roll here with your comments. Get him in. If I miss it, just and you feel like, wow, he's really gone through all these other comments but mine, post it again. I'll always be able to see the super chats right away, but no obligation to do that. I just would like to get to everybody's chats, but I'm doing the best I can sometimes with the technology. Bradley says good quality win tonight, and I'd agree with that. Nick gives it an LFG. Mike says Michaelis was a little shaky here and there, but definitely good enough to earn the win, and he certainly was. Brent, those are the games I would turn off last year because I knew they'd blow it. Feels good to watch it through. Yeah, that was the kind of game that they probably do lose, guys, back in 2023, and tonight they don't. That's notable. Look, it's early. It's a 500 record, which feels better than a losing record, but I do feel like you can, if you're trying to spot the differences, a little bit of guess and check compared to last year's team, there are some compelling qualities to this one that that may be able to stand the test of time. Look, starting pitching is going to be the main thing. If you can continue to churn out these quality starts, it is going to be a completely different game. Because I know we say it and we go, well, they burned out the bullpen last year because of the starters not being able to go deep enough. And there's like two sides to that coin. One of the sides to the coin is the fact that across Major League Baseball, starters aren't going 6-7. Like, it's just not a commonality anymore. But the Cardinals, the way they built their team, have decided we do want to pursue baseball in that fashion. We believe that if we can get 6-7 innings of our starters, it's going to make life easier on our bullpen. We think we have good relief pitchers, but they're going to need to be fresh in order to be effective. They're going to need to be fresh, so how do we do it? We get our starters to go 6-7, and we use the relief pitchers less. Like, that's almost the mantra that the Cardinals have. And then it's score 5 or 6 runs, have a lineup that can be robust 1-9, and I think today you got a pretty good example of them just doing just enough. This was an efficient game, I would say, for the Cardinals offensively, because when you have 6 hits and 4 walks and you are able to put up 5 runs as a result, that's a pretty solid way of going about things. Trying to check out the runners in scoring position. They were 0-6 tonight with runners in scoring position. So the efficiency, where does it come from? It comes from the Wilson Contreras home run, accounting for 2 of your runs, and it comes from the small ball that they played in the 3rd inning, or whatever the heck inning that was. Yeah, the 3rd inning. Like, that accounts for 3 of your 5 runs right there, and then, you know, they put you into a situation, you took your walks, and then you have the 8th inning unfold the way that it does, with the catcher just not stepping on home plate. That's just taking advantage of an opportunity. It doesn't count as a base hit with runners in scoring position, but any ball in play basically at that point by Arenado, barring it being like an infield pop-up, is going to get the Cardinals on the board. So they were able to take advantage of that, and then the Herrera sacrifice fly, that's where the efficiency comes from, and that's something you can feel good about if you're a Cardinal fan. So, like, you combine those things. Good quality starting pitching. You don't have to have aces. You have to have guys that go 6-7 and give up 2 or 3. That's the blueprint. That's why you sign Lance Lynn. That's why you sign Kyle Gibson. They're not going to do it every game, but they're going to do it often enough in theory that it's going to get you to have your offense with an opportunity to score 4 or 5 and win a baseball game. Miles Michaelis is structured in a pretty similar way. And so we saw that play out for him tonight with him just getting you that quality start and the rest. It kind of works for itself. 37 likes. We like that in the chat. Can we get the live video chat like counter up to 50? Let's make that happen. And I do. I have to continue to take a drink of water as we go through because I don't want to lose the voice here. That's a winner. Seemed like a fast game, said the caffeinated candid classroom. And that's absolutely the case. I think it was like 2 hours 20. Like I said, we weren't going to be able to do the live stream tonight if it had been a longer game. But when it was over around 11 o'clock, I thought, well, I guess I don't have an excuse anymore. Let's go ahead and do it. Brett, love to see a little bit of Whitey Herzog small ball from the Cardinals. Yeah, look, I thought that if you're going to do that, it's fine to do, and especially when it works out and you can get the execution from the players. Michael Ciani laying down the bunt, you have to still execute that play. Then you know, all right, we've basically given up an out to put Victor Scott on third. Mason Wynn's got to deliver the sacrifice fly, and he did. That's really good small ball. I don't know if I love the idea of giving away the free outs and basically saying we're going to settle for one run this inning. However, when you execute it, it's kind of hard to argue with. Now, where it gets interesting to me is actually later in the game. This obviously didn't come back to hurt the Cardinals, but in the inning where they made the wholesale defensive changes, they took Donovan from second, moved him to left. They brought Gorman into the game, but he didn't pinch hit. He came in as a defensive replacement, and then they moved Ciani from left to right, and it was Gorman actually coming in for Jordan Walker within the lineup structure so that they could get Walker out for defensive purposes. Ciani is a good defensive outfielder, and so that did give them from left to right in the outfield a pretty good alignment, and Nolan Gorman has looked pretty good defensively at second base, so you felt just fine about having it go that way. What was interesting, though, is why don't they necessarily go with the same small ball mentality in that inning? I want to say it was around the seventh inning when it happened, where it was Victor Scott that, I'm trying to remember at this point. No, it was Jordan that got the double. Jordan Walker ends up on second base. Victor Scott could have bunted, and just like any of the other guys at the bottom of the order who have good speed, maybe you beat out the bunt base hit and you're able to kind of parlay that into a bigger inning. But if nothing else, you should be able to advance Jordan Walker to third, and now there's less than two outs, so you give, I guess it would have been at that time, Ciani an opportunity to try and score the sacrifice fly. Now, maybe if it's a case of his skill set is not the same as Wynn's, to where they wouldn't have been confident for him to be able to pull that off, okay. But now you're in the late innings with a one-run lead, I believe it was at the time, and so you're looking to try and capitalize on anything that you can. That would have been the time to really sell out for just the one run. Obviously, later on, Yuki Matsui had multiple walks that he gave up, and so the Cardinals were able to score runs anyway later on in that eighth inning. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. If you're going to go for the small ball early, how come they don't do it late? The answer to that could be Michael Ciani, different skill set than Mason Wynn in terms of being able to deliver that sacrifice fly. But I did think that was a little bit interesting, especially knowing that Victor Scott probably capable of laying a bunt down and maybe being able to beat it out to first base too. Jordan Walker being the base runner is a little bit different than when they did it previously, because obviously if Victor is your base runner, you feel very good about him advancing and making the play that needs to be made in terms of the foot speed. I don't think that Walker's a terrible base runner, but he doesn't obviously have the speed when we're talking about Victor Scott. So that was kind of my little thought about the small ball, but I knew that there would be some Cardinals fans that really enjoyed it. I think there were some that said, you know what, it's nice that you scored the run, but you're also settling for less than you could have had. So let me know in the comments, too, what you guys thought of that play. Mike says, not going to lie, I was expecting the bullpen to blow it. Look, I mean, I do think, I don't know where I would rank it, but I do think that this bullpen has a chance to be a pretty solid one, especially if you end up getting back Keenan Middleton healthy. Maybe Riley O'Brien, the news on him wasn't necessarily devastating with structural damage, and so perhaps he's a guy that you're able to get back sooner rather than later as well. I do think this bullpen could be a good one, and if the answers that you're getting to use on a fairly regular basis are guys like Gallegos, guys like Helsley, I mean, they were able to use kind of the A-team tonight, and I would include Andrew Kittredge within that as well. I don't know. More often than not, they shouldn't be blowing these games because those are your top-quality pitchers, and if they end up being the way that they're billed to be and they're pretty good, they're pretty reliable for you, I think that's going to be a mark in the positive favor for the Cardinals this season. Allison, great to see all the members of the team contribute in different ways. I agree. Like, that's two games in a row where you could say, hey, the offense, whether, like, tonight it wasn't a great with runners in scoring position game. However, they did pick up the sacrifice flies where they needed it. That doesn't show up in the 0-for-6 with Risp, but those runs were still plated nevertheless. You only left five on base. Last night you went 5-for-15, I believe it was, with runners in scoring position. So you had obviously more opportunities, but you came through with some very meaningful swings within those opportunities. And then guys like Contreras, I mean, I loved seeing the lineup today that he was in the three hole if Nolan Gorman is not going to be. Like, you don't have to necessarily overthink that. I know it's Goldschmidt, Contreras, Arenado, and that's three righties in a row. That's just what the lineup called for today. I thought that was a completely reasonable way to do it if Gorman was going to be out. And, man, the way that Contreras is swinging it at times, he could end up being a guy that you want to bat higher up in the order. I know the batting average is low, just 176, but he's got an 862 OPS, and that is going to play. I mean, that certainly could be an OPS that he sees for the season. I don't think that's impossible at all. I'll get real quickly. Well, I'm going to, yeah, let me get to Allison's. She asked the official length of the game, seemed to move along at a fast pace. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I can find it for you. 2 hours, 23 was the official duration of that game. And that was, yeah, it really did move fast. It had a chance to be even faster than that before they kind of got a little bit of a slower pace to it in the late innings. Mike, jumping in with the super chat. Appreciate you, Mike. Thank you so much, man. He asked this question. Do you think Mo would shop for another ace if the Cards have a real chance at a postseason spot? Or do you think we got to dance with who brought us? I think it's going to depend on performance and injury status of that rotation. Because if you have the five, if your five ends up being coming into mid to late July, Sonny Gray, Miles Michaelis, Zach Thompson probably will be shifted to a different role by that point if everybody's healthy. We'll see. Maybe he's able to pitch his way into it. But Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, Steven Matz, like if your five are your five and one of the five isn't performing, in the case of Matz, they've already shown a willingness in past seasons to sort of usher him into the bullpen if it's necessary, if the performance dictates it. So, like, that's a possibility. I don't think anybody's rooting for Matz to struggle, but if it were to happen, that's a spot that if you have an opportunity to acquire an ace at the deadline, you could. And then maybe Matz could just come into spring training next year. He's still got more time on his contract with another opportunity to be a starting pitcher if they don't re-sign Lynn or re-sign Gibson. Lynn and Gibson are obviously guys that are on one-year contracts. So if it's the case that the Cardinals look at their performances and say, look, we might be able to upgrade on this at the deadline, and then you ask either or both of those guys, hey, you know, move to a bullpen, would that suit you? Even if the answer is no, it doesn't really matter that much at that point. Again, we're living in a hypothetical where those guys struggle, whereas they've been two of your better pitchers through that first turn through the rotation. So I'm not subscribing to that, but since Mike asked the question, since he gave me some of his money, I want to make sure to do a diligent job of answering that question. I think in that world, you could look at that theoretically and say, well, if those guys aren't performing and they're only on one-year contracts, maybe there's an ace that's controllable and the Cardinals decide, yep, it's worth it to trade for him. And you sort of slide that guy into your rotation if he's got 2 or 3 years left on whatever deal he's on. And then he's into your rotation as a top-end guy next year to go with Sonny Gray and with Michaelis and, you know, whoever else remains. It's possible, Mike. I just don't know how likely it is because the Cardinals have been relatively resistant to, you know, making those types of trades when they have to give up a bunch of assets under the gun of a deadline, right? Mozeliak has done it, but it's typically been on the lower end of the scale when he makes those trades, trading assets like Elaine Thomas, who I know has turned out to be a nice player for the Washington Nationals. But with the Cardinals organization at the time, they didn't have a playing spot for him. They didn't think they were going to be able to give him time. And so it was an easier type of deal to stomach. The deals that you make for an ace in July, those are never easy to stomach because you're giving up valuable commodities that, frankly, the Cardinals have historically not been super willing to part with. NEA just chiming in with some fire emojis. That's appropriate. Brett, I'm surprisingly liking Michael Ciani a lot more than I thought he would. Yeah, Ciani is a solid player. I think the bat at the big league level would be the question. But look, doesn't it kind of remind you of a guy like Lane Thomas, where when he was with the Cardinals and wasn't hitting, you go, okay, I mean, he can run around and as he can be an athletic guy in the outfield, but, you know, what's the bat going to bring? And then if the bat ends up bringing something, you have a really interesting player on your hands. I just think it's a struggle for Ciani at this point because where's that consistent playing time going to come? It's clear that he's kind of down the depth chart. The Cardinals have lost a number of outfielders this spring, and still he's not necessarily getting regular opportunity to be a starter. Ikta says, woo, we back, and we are. Andrew, anybody else loving Kittredge? Dude is a stud. Yeah, I think Kittredge is going to be, if I'm not mistaken, gosh dang, did I name him reliever of the year when I did my little preseason predictions? I don't know if I had the gumption to do it or if I just said Helsley. I think what I did do is I said Helsley. I don't need to look up the tweet because now I remember. I said Helsley, but then I said shout out as well to Kittredge and Rob, which was Riley O'Brien, who, you know, pending the injury situation, I could still be proven right on that. But yeah, I think Kittredge is going to fit in really, really well. He's a guy that's got veteran experience, and you don't feel like you're on pins and needles when you bring him into a seventh or eighth inning situation to be the setup guy. Like, I think you can rely on him and the experience and the stuff that he brings to the table. I like that delivery, man. I think that's got to be tough to bat against. because it is a little bit funky. It's a little bit different. Mike adds that Victor Scott's speed makes the game a little more fun. It is, because you just never know what's going to happen. There is a wider range of possible outcomes when Victor Scott is involved, and I think that does make things fun. The likes are up to 51. Appreciate you guys for that. Can we get it to 61? Can we match Roger Maris within the next couple of minutes? Appreciate you guys for being here. By the way, hit the subscribe button. If you're thinking, man, the comments look fun, but I haven't been able to join, I can't figure this out, hit subscribe. It's in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. It's right there. All you got to do is click that button, and it'll lead you where you need to go in terms of subscribing. And we do Cardinals videos like every day on this channel. So if you're a Cardinals fan, yeah, it only stands to reason that you'd want to probably be in here. Chan the Man loves Donovan, would like to see him get the early extension. Yeah, we haven't seen those in a while. I think the Cardinals have soured a little bit on the idea of the early extension, the pre-arb or the mid-arb extension for position players. Think Paul DeJong or Alan Craig or guys that kind of got those deals back in the day. We haven't really seen it to that effect in a while. Like Tommy Edman got a two-year extension with the Cardinals this offseason, but that was to buy him out of arb, not to really buy out free agency. And obviously right now with the injury, I don't know how they're feeling about that decision. But nevertheless, I do think Donovan would be a candidate. When I think about that, though, it's always like, great, you want this player, so try to get him for less money. The player is aware that he's pretty good, too. So if I'm Brendan Donovan, I have to weigh that option of, do I really want to give away some of this leverage that I have to lock in the certainty of a long-term deal, or do I think I can play my way into something better the longer I wait? It's going to depend on what an agent says, what each individual player values and wants in terms of that cost certainty. And so that's not always something that I think we can just say, hey, get the extension done. Yeah, it's got to be a two-way street. And Brett adding that Kittredge is the exact bullpen piece that the Cardinals need. And I think he was a great get. I think Palacios can end up being a fine player with Tampa. But for me, Siani and Palacios, kind of similar, you know, guys in terms of where they would have been organizational standing-wise. And Siani's out there, you know, doing what they need to do, filling that role. And it took how many injuries just to get him involved? There just wasn't really room for Palacios. He was a great story. And the fact that the Cardinals signed, you know, were able to acquire him for, you know, whatever it was, $100,000, and then trade him for a pitcher in relief that they really could use in Kittredge, I think that's a great set of moves by John Mozeliak and company. Cardinal squad, Redbird winner. Brett says Thursday cannot come soon enough. I can't wait to be at Busch on Thursday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Allison asking my favorite part of opening day at Busch. It's just having it back. Because when you get into the throes of the season and it's every day and it's in the summer, you're not always just like so amped to go to the ballpark. Like, I'll be honest, sometimes you're like, oh man, it does feel like work. You're always happy to be at the ballpark, but at the same time, you know, there's something different about the pageantry of that first day where you know that everybody is just excited to be there. So, I mean, I'm just excited to see a packed stadium, because honestly, there were times last year where you didn't see it packed. And it's understandable because the Cardinals weren't very good last year. But you know that it's going to be rocking and rolling. And just to see downtown, you know, having a good time on opening day. Like, I'm never a part of that party. I'm always working and I'm seeing people, you know, with their Diet Budweisers having a good time. I'm like, that looks like a lot of fun. I have a little bit of a different perspective on it. It's still a blast for me. I wouldn't trade it for the world. But it is interesting. In 2021, I believe it was after COVID. And they, you know, fans were allowed back in on a limited capacity at the beginning of that season. And then they opened it up as the season went. But for the beginning, there was a limitation. There was still a restriction, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I think this was 2021, because it wouldn't have mattered for 2020 because there were no fans in the ballpark anyway, is what I think it was. One of the 2 years, though, I was not able to get in. You know, there was just too many people from my affiliate, whatever the case was, I couldn't cover the game. And maybe it was 2020. I'm trying to remember. Because 2021, that wouldn't have made much sense. If there were fans in the building, I could have just bought a ticket if I really wanted to be in there. I don't know. My memory is not helping me out here. At any rate, it was enough to where, like, people were still out and about doing stuff, whether that was 2020 or 2021. And long story short, I, you know, went out and around and enjoyed kind of watching people do what they do, and I wrote a story about that. It's going to bother me the rest of the night what year that was. I'll have to go back and find my story from that day if it's still up on KMOV's website. But nevertheless, opening day is cool to see from whether you're in the stadium or just like experiencing downtown and among the people. It's really cool. Everybody should go down and just have a great time. That's what opening day is about. should be a national holiday, or at least a local one. Everybody should be off work. Brett says, I'm obsessed with seeing the Cardinals play small ball, bunt the runner over. Shoot, we lost our spot. I'll try and find it here. YouTube jumps me sometimes to where I can't see what I'm doing. Bunt the runner over, stealing run with sacrifice flies, just getting runs where we couldn't last season. Yeah, I think a lot of people are a fan, Brett, of the small ball, for sure. Monkey Tut, I think if I'm saying that right, is there a different vibe going on with Scott's spot on the team, knowing that they played Nupar and left as opposed to the previous report of a start in center? Yes, I think it does make a difference. Like, if Nupar's not playing center, it means, all right, they can take their time. Like, eventually they can play him in center, and that would be fine. But if they were playing him a bunch in center right now, that would spell something different to me. So what it spells is probably less good news for Siani's spot than it is for Victor, because I think Nupar will need just a couple games and he'll be ready. I don't think Victor will go out when Nupar comes up. I do think it gets more interesting when either Dylan or Tommy are ready to return. Like, what does it look like for Victor Scott at that point? Could be a different conversation. Icta says seeing small ball was a massive positive from last year as well. Corey, I was nervous the entire time Michaelis was pitching. It wasn't all soft contact, but he got it done in the end. Yeah, sometimes with Michaelis, it's like whatever the contact is, it seems to go where the fielders aren't. In that, you can attribute to bad luck, but you can also say, like, if they're seeing the ball real well, you can almost, it's like you're in slow motion swinging at it. And I'm not a Major League Baseball player, so this is just me speculating. But the way it feels watching it sometimes is when a guy is hittable, it doesn't necessarily mean you're hitting home runs off of him every single time. You know, the other angle of that is you're just getting kind of singled and doubled to death because they're able to spot your pitches up and put them where they want to. That's kind of what it looked like for Waino last year a lot of times, right? Like, you could say, well, gosh, I gave up five hits in a row. They were all singles. Yeah, but you're not, your pitches aren't doing anything. So it's still a reflection of how you're pitching when that's going on. And it was. Waino didn't pitch well last year. In the case of Michaelis today, that's what I was seeing from him early on in the game. And then I don't think guys were able to square him up as easily, and he got better as the game went tonight. But you're right, Corey. Like, early on, I thought, man, this could be another one of those Dodgers outings that he had. And it didn't end up being that way. He really settled in nicely. Mike really likes seeing Scott stretch the single into a double, turning it into a run. We've talked about the small ball with that. The next episode with Charlie Marlowe, Chandler wants to know, is hopefully, we just talked about it. He texted me this morning, either tomorrow or Friday, and it may be both. I'll text him in the morning and see if we can't get it done. Sometimes it's hard because we both have kids. If our kids are home, it makes it tougher to record together. And so we're working to make that happen, and we want to do it multiple times per week. But I know Charlie's doing like a political podcast, and he does NASCAR, and he does baseball. He does all kinds of stuff. Well, I'm trying to make sure we can do as much as we can, so just stay patient with that. Korn says, let's go Cards. By the way, though, if you're wondering what's a Charlie Marlowe, Charlie and I do low-hanging fruit podcast about the Cardinals that we just do together. They put it, he puts it on his YouTube channel. I do throw it on my B-Shape Daily feed on Spotify, though. So if you want to make sure you never miss anything that I'm involved in, that's another place to go. Spotify, just search B-Shape Daily. Give it a good rate and review as well. Because there are these like baseball podcast rankings. And I'm like, man, I'm outside the top 100 sometimes because I do it all on YouTube and I don't focus enough on Spotify. I need to get my numbers up on Spotify. Korn says they look night and day from the different from the first series. They do look different, but they're playing a different team. Like, that's part of it too. The Dodgers are one team and the Padres are another one. So, Grave of Einstein, sort of satisfying to watch Matsui blow it after wanting him so bad. Yeah, I thought Yuki Matsui would be really good. He had no command tonight, and it allowed the Cardinals to get some of the insurance runs that they, I guess they were craving it. Did they really need it at the end of the day? Perhaps not, because the bullpen settled in so nicely. But yeah, Yuki, not a great night for him. Willie goes bomb. Yes, he did, Cardinals squad. Korn is asking for permission to call Tink Hentz Stink as an inside joke, because on the last podcast or live stream, he was asking about Stink, and it was simply a typo. He wasn't trying to talk smack on the Cardinal prospect. But wouldn't it be nice, as we're talking about Tink Hentz, wouldn't it be nice to see one of those guys, whether it's Tink Hentz or Cooper Jerpy or Tekoa Roby or Gordon Graceffo or Michael McGreevy, like the Cardinals need one or two of those guys to turn into like a number three starter by August. You know what I mean? Like a guy that you could bring up to the big leagues and he can just be solid. I will throw Zach Thompson into that boat as well, because he's in the rotation right now, but if you're mentally cataloging Zach Thompson, do you consider him like a quality number three, or are you considering him like the number six that's just trying to catch on? Because that's kind of still, I think, where a lot of people have him in their minds. That may be where he deserves to be, but I think he can pitch better than that. He's got some good stuff, and if he can turn into a guy that by the end of the year we're going, oh yeah, Zach Thompson, everybody would love to see him in the rotation next year on a cheaper salary than what, you know, you have to go out and dig in free agency and get a guy that makes $11 million, then that's something that can make the Cardinals, like, it's all about development. The Cardinals have got to find a way to develop some of those guys, and some of the young ones like Tink maybe aren't going to quite be ready just yet, which is why you'd like to see that upper echelon, the guys in AAA, really maybe take that next step this year. Contreras is huge for this team. He certainly is, and can be a middle order threat. And even if he's catching, if he's not, I like that they brought in Ivan Herrera tonight for a pinch hit opportunity, even though there's not a third catcher on the roster. That's okay. Like, just live on the edge a little bit. If your catcher gets hurt, you can have a new one tomorrow. But they need to be willing to use that second catcher in opportunities like that. And yes, there may be a time that it absolutely comes back to bite them if there's an injury, but, you know, that's going to be a one-night instance, and it'll be really annoying, but not as annoying as having a Trace Barrera on the roster for 3 weeks and he gets, like, no plate appearances. That never should have happened. Jeff says, Arenado's still making me nervous. Yeah, you know, he's still kind of coming into his own, and we'll see how it ends up looking, but I still think that's a work in progress. Corn says, how about Chippy with the flat larynx tonight, fighting through it? Yep, I mentioned that off the top. I don't know if that's something that'll make it to the Spotify podcast or not, because I can't remember if I talked about that before or after I said officially we're good to go with B-Shape Daily Live. But yeah, Chip, man, he was fighting through it. I like getting to hear more of the cat. I like that Brad Thompson just sort of wrestled the power away from Chip later on in the game. And I thought Chip was a trooper about it, kind of self-deprecating, making jokes about his voice. So that was cool. Austin says he likes the stream. I appreciate that, man. Thank you for being here. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, guys, if you enjoy Cardinal content. We're going to bring a lot of it to you this year. Gerald, if Arenado turns it on and Sonny comes back, this team can be dangerous. And it's not just those two, but it's a good point. Like, and Goldie is still kind of a little bit of a work in progress to my eyes. You know, 0 for 3 tonight, but had a walk, but a couple of strikeouts. So the OPS is now below 800. It's going to be a work in progress. Batting average-wise, all these guys pretty much, outside of Donovan anymore and Mason Wynn, are works in progress. Yeah, if your best players are your best players, it's certainly going to be able to help you out. But as Ikta mentioned, Arenado almost always starts slow. Love the manufacturing of the runs. If you got guys that start slow, you want to see them get back to going at their full capacity as soon as possible. It's especially the case with Arenado, though, because the last half of 2023 was rough for him. And I feel like that's still got people on edge a little bit. Like, what if he is not the same guy anymore? I tend to believe he's going to be okay, but I also think that the idea, his high-end upside that he once possessed, is maybe a little bit diminished. But that doesn't mean he can't still be like an 820, 830, 840 even OPS type of guy that plays really good, consistent defense. And I still think he'll be a streaky guy too. So there will be times that, you know, when he is going, you're going to notice him in major ways. So I think that's something else to keep in mind. Nick says, I'm getting physically ill from Mason Wynn bunting. Yeah, like he can do it, but also, you know, you're giving away outs. There's a lot of bunts going on. And maybe the way they view their lineup internally is like, hey, 1 through 6, 1 through 7, especially when Newt gets back, that's untouchable. You know, that's those are the guys that you expect to be able to carry the lumber. And then the guys at the bottom, you're basically here to find your way on base any way that you can, and the bunt is a part of that. But it feels like they're doing it a little bit often for my taste, but I also understand it with the way that they kind of couch the skill sets of those players. Mike says he didn't have a problem with how they got Victor home. Hear what you're saying about the more aggressive approach, but it felt like well-executed baseball. That's my takeaway too, Mike. Well-executed by the players. You can make a gripe if you don't like the manager calling for it, but he called for it. It worked. It was just maybe a lower upside ploy than letting it play out. But also, you're not guaranteed to score a run if you just let it play out straight up. And I do think they increased their chances of scoring a run by doing it the way they did it. And they landed that run. They probably lowered their chances of a big inning. And if I'm in the third inning, I'm typically hoping for a big inning at that point still, because that can be a way to basically end the game right then and there. Obviously, they went the way that they went. And again, it's not that it didn't work out. I just think it's an interesting conversation because I could see both sides of it. And it seems like most of y'all have kind of been there as well. Some of you like it. Some of you say, I prefer not to see the bunts. Lo and behold, though, they get the run scored. That really ends up being kind of the name of the game. Jeff says hopefully Keenan Middleton will be a solid contributor too, and Korn mentions that the defense looks good. Agree on the defense. We've seen some nice moments from a number of players. Mason Wynn is going to continue to lock down short. I like what I see from Victor in center. And agree with Jeff that if they can get Keenan back, that would be a helpful way to boost the bullpen too. Asher, we back. Cardinals might be back. They're going for the sweep tomorrow. You know what that means. A chance to put out one of those sweeps aren't that hard tweets. I've been waiting for the chance. Korn doesn't mind the bunts if the lineup hits the width they have the last 2 days. Again, I think top seven, if they're hitting and then you're letting the lower guys bunt and then turn things over, first of all, you're going to see Brendan Donovan drive in a lot of runs if they can get those guys at the bottom on base like that. Tim says, love the content. Thoughts on Nootbaar starting in center field tonight? He didn't. That's the thought. It was reported, Tim, that he would, but then didn't end up being the case. It was just a mistake posted by Memphis. I believe Kyle Reese was watching that game and shared with everybody that Newt was actually in left field, as Corey mentions here as well. Ollie did just say that Wilson, quote, wants to kill, so I got to respect him and never make him an enemy. No, he's got that killer instinct, dude. And this Cardinal team needs a little bit of that. And I feel like they sort of neutered it within Contreras last year. Not that he didn't still have those moments where he was himself, but like when you start getting the little rumblings and you got the little caddy whispering behind the scenes about your catcher and it's all the pitching staff doing it, and notice those guys aren't here anymore. Oops. Like, you know, there's some benefit to just being able to have Wilson go out and be Wilson, right? And again, I make little jokes about that from last year. We know that last year didn't go well, and so it's easier in hindsight to be like, well, somebody had to be to blame for it. I think all in all, it just could have been handled better by all parties. And it's not something they're having to deal with this year, at least to this point, and hopefully they never do, because that was a miserable time. And I think Wilson being himself is going to pay dividends for this Cardinal team. Alex wasn't a fan of the Chip Carey day, but again, the guy was battling through it, so I understand it. Korn lives for Jimmy the Cat Hayes, as do I. I'll be on Hot Take Central Friday morning, 590 The Fan, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. if you like a radio show that has me and Jim the Cat Hayes and Cam Jansen, then that would be the show for you. And of course, Cole Bartimus. We can't forget about Cole here. And then Thursday, I might even be able to join those guys on the live remote on the day of opening day. We'll see exactly what that ends up looking like. Let me see here. Show me Prodigy when Nootbaar comes back. Edmund could be traded for a reliever or a starting pitcher. I don't think so. When people have said this a lot to me, I think it's just kind of like an MLB The Show sort of thought process. What team is going, yeah, you can take my number three starter for Tommy Edman, who hasn't been healthy? Like, I just don't think there's a realistic way to make that happen. For a reliever, perhaps, but also that feels like underselling on the versatility that Tommy Edman could bring to your roster. They did say they want Edman to be an outfielder only, but it's nice to have in the back of your pocket if you really need him to be moved around. That's a nice guy to have. He's got a good skill set. So I'm not really looking to go, hey, let's trade Tommy. I understand the thought process, but it feels a little bit MLB The Show for me. Joseph would like to see them pick up Nabil Chrismat, who was DFA'd by LA. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. He shoved against the Cardinals. Two scoreless innings, three strikeouts in his last appearance, and then they dropped him the next day for, I believe, Denelson Lamet, which, you know, he's kind of got a big name, but it's been, I don't know, the Dodgers always think they can fix somebody, and they're usually right, but I thought Chrismat was pitching well. He'll land somewhere on his feet, there's no doubt. Jeff says, I love Victor. Also, do see how he can benefit from time in AAA. Yeah, and he may end up getting AAA because Dylan's going to come back at some point. We figure that the same is true for Edmund, and at that point, there is going to be a squeeze on the roster. Victor Scott's ceiling, a comp like Billy Hamilton, or better yet, I think better than Billy Hamilton, because Billy Hamilton couldn't hit. You know, Magnera Sierra couldn't hit. I think Victor Scott, I'm not going to say Michael Harris because I don't think he'll ever have that level of home run power. But that's like if you were to build a range of Victor Scott potential, it would be like on a 1 to 100 scale, the 1 would be someone like Mag Sierra, the 100 would be Michael Harris. And I think he can land as like, you know, a 60 or 70 on that scale. Billy Hamilton would probably be like a 30 out of 100. I think Victor Scott has legitimate bat-to-ball skills and he can be a good hitter that can be a leadoff hitter eventually in his career. You know, he's never played AAA, so you're batting him at the bottom of the order right now, and that's the correct move. But I think there's upside for him to continue to improve as an offensive force and be there's a lot of ceiling, a lot of helium potential for Victor Scott in his game. That's my opinion, and that's a good question by Ethan. Good point about his pay. I don't dislike Crawford by any means, but keep up the great work. Love your content. Well, thank you, Brett. Appreciate you. Joseph says the defense will suffer without Scott. 100%. And stolen bases, too. I think that's the main thing. When they moved Tommy to center field and they signed Brandon Crawford, who everybody was like, yeah, do they really need Brandon Crawford? In their mind, yes, because they wanted to stabilize defense in center field. They wanted to do that with Tommy Edman. Tommy's not healthy. So who's the next best thing? And maybe even better defensively, it's Victor Scott. So if Victor Scott can be just an average hitter or, you know, slightly below average, which Tommy Edman, Dylan Carlson, those guys were a little below average at times as well. You know, 95 OPS plus is more than enough for Victor Scott. And I think he can develop from there. But I'm just talking about as a rookie, you would take anything 90, 95, just 5 to 10% below league average is good enough with the defense that he brings. And the stolen bases are going to make him a more valuable player because he does things that others cannot. Miles asks, what should I get prepped for Brendan? Should I be excited about a fun small ball rolling offense with okay pitching, or should I be prepped for a really long season? No, I think this team can be fun. I do think this Cardinals team has a lot of room to be fun and that you can invest. I think you can emotionally invest a little bit in what this season could be, because if you invest now rather than just kind of, you know, take it slow, keep them at arm's length for the first few months, and if it's going bad, then, you know, you kind of live through that and see what it can turn out to be, because this could be a team that has some growing pains, but I think the core is there to be solid. I'm not predicting this to be like a 90-95 win season, but like I said, preseason around 83, is that enough to maybe win the division? I think it could be. The Pirates are certainly going to be a force to be reckoned with if they continue to play the way that they have started. But yeah, you get to that kind of pace of an 83 win season, you add somebody at the deadline, and now you're like an 85-86, and that could be enough, and the Cardinals could be a team that, I know it doesn't look like it right now, but if you have Sonny Gray, and then, again, I'm not saying Kyle Gibson's going to go 7-2 every time he pitches, or that Lance Lynn's going to be scoreless outing one after another, or that Miles Michaelis, but like, I think they can come up with a number 2 and a number 3 in a rotation for a playoff series. The key is going to be score those 5 runs. You got to have a minimum 5. I think we are going to look back on this season and say, how many games did the Cardinals score 5 runs in and how many did they not? And more often than not, they're going to win those 5 run games. That's probably true for a lot of MLB teams, but I think in particular the Cardinals, that's going to be the case for them. So we'll end up seeing what it looks like. But Miles, I think you can invest, my friend. You can be emotionally invested. They'll play some small ball. They'll play some big ball. Wilson Contreras home run. Like, that's the kind of thing they can do. They're a little bit varied in the potential that they have. Just give me one moment for a sip of water. Show Me Prodigy says, lineup, Donovan, Goldie, Gorman, Nato, Contreras, Newt Barr-Walker, Scott Wynn, Burleson, Crawford, Herrera, Carpenter on the bench. Yep, I think that's kind of what it could look like, although no Carlson on that list. But Carlson's going to be, you know, still a little bit longer. So when Carlson comes back, then you have to figure out what to do. And that could be when Wynn goes. But if Wynn's playing well, maybe, you know, I'm not, Burleson could go at that point. I don't know. It depends on what the needs of the team are at the time. Jeff says that Gorman doesn't necessarily need to be batting third. And I don't think he will be when Newt Barr returns, by the way. I think Gorman gets bumped to fifth or maybe sixth. And Newt Barr would be the lefty they could slot in there. Personally, that's what I would do. I think that Newt Barr doesn't maybe have the power that Gorman has, but I want a more consistent hitter in the three hole. And I think that is something that Newt can be. And Show Me Prodigy talking about Victor Scott, need his defense, period. This team has always been good when it has an elite center fielder roam in the outfield, and I would agree with that. Joseph said he'd send down Walker before Scott. I don't necessarily agree with that. I want to see Jordan Walker play through a little bit of his struggles offensively, because I think he needs to end up, you know, needs to be able to get it rolling. So I don't know. I can understand that you could be frustrated with a slow start for a guy, but again, he's like 21 years old, so I'm still in on Jordan Walker. Brian, welcome into the stream. Offense coming alive, pitching looking better. Love to see it. Like to see Miles work on some chase stuff a little more, but overall a better start for him this outing. And Kittredge was a great pickup. Yeah, Miles is never going to be a big strikeout guy. He was one of the lowest strikeout rates in Major League Baseball the last year, and I think it's just going to be kind of what he is, because it wasn't all too dissimilar to what he had been previously when he was having good years. He's just not a big strikeout guy. But I think rather than having chase stuff, you have to minimize the 2 strike counts where you just throw a pitch right down the middle of the plate, Because, again, they don't have to hit it for a homer for it to have been a bad pitch. It can be a bad pitch and be hit for a single, and you made life too easy on them in the way that, you know, you allow them to make contact with the pitch and kind of serve it to a place where a fielder wasn't. That would be what I would see from Michaelis, if anything. The chase stuff is always a nice dream, but is it a realistic one? You know, that's maybe a different question. Hunter says, I think the name of the game with the pitching staff is going to be limiting damage. They're all going to give up a few runs every game. The difference will be if they can keep innings from snowballing. And another element of this, I saw this from Only Cards fans on Twitter. He went and looked through last year. Kyle Gibson had a bunch of wins with the Baltimore Orioles, but the ERA was kind of high. And Kyle Gibson had mentioned last night that he was pitching to the score. Cardinals had a nice lead, and so he was willing to throw a few more strikes to a guy like Tatis Jr. and burned him for a home run as a result, and that was the second run that he gave up. But it's not a run that impacts the Cardinals because they win the game, and Kyle Gibson, as a result of being a little bit more efficient, being willing to throw more strikes and maybe get burned on one if it's a solo home run, allows him to complete seven innings, which is something that had a lot of value to the Cardinals yesterday. So this idea that you can almost, if the offense does its job, you can pitch to the score and be somebody that gets deeper into the game as a result, even if it's something that causes you to end up giving up some runs here and there with some solo shots. So I thought that was interesting. Felix, what's going on, man? I really appreciate the super chat. So proud of you for the channel's success. You built this thing from the ground up. Hope you're doing well. How are you feeling about Helsley after tonight? Felix, it's good to hear from you, man. Yeah, it's been about a year since I started this channel, and Felix was one of the first people listening back in the day when it was like 4 a.m. and I was streaming to three people just to have them help me like with tech stuff. So appreciate Felix for that. I feel great about Helsley. I think he's going to have a good year. I know the ERA is 6. It just doesn't really concern me. I think he's going to be good. Look, he was good last year. When you go back and look at Ryan Helsley's stats from last season, what do you remember about it as a fan? You go, well, he was hurt. Well, he was unreliable. He wasn't always available for the team. But the numbers that he had were like among the best relievers in baseball, even still, in a shorter amount of time. Only threw 36 and two-thirds innings. Had a 2.45 ERA and 52 strikeouts in those 36 innings. He was great last year. I think he's going to be great this year. Blew a save against the Dodgers. Other closers are going to do that in baseball this year as well. Appreciate you guys who are here on the screen right now. We're over 100 viewers live as of this moment, which is great. For the newbies coming in, hit the subscribe button in the lower right corner of your screen if you like Cardinals content every day. Let's get to Mark McGwire on the likes. We're at 61. Excuse me, I believe we can get to 70. Hunter, I think the name of the... Oh, I just read that one. Thompson doesn't match up well against the team tomorrow. Could be an ugly one early. And it's going to be, yeah, Zach Thompson against the Padres, 3 p.m. You know, I don't think you have to necessarily settle for that. It's time for Zach Thompson to put it together and have a good start. Because I think if he doesn't, he could be, I don't know, into the bullpen, into AAA. Like, something could potentially have to give. He's only going to get maybe one to two more opportunities before Sonny Gray is back. And I think he's a better pitcher than he showed by giving up three home runs in that first game. So, would like to see him really put it together tomorrow. But we'll have to wait and see if he's able to accomplish that. Walker leads off with a double. We have three speedy, unproven rookies up next. Why not bunt him over the third? That's a question from Floppy, and I addressed that a little bit earlier on, and I agree with the premise. It's like, and I think that was the seventh inning, if I'm not mistaken. You had inning number three. You did exactly that. You played small ball with it, and then later on in the game, when you had a lead, and really all you wanted was one more run just to give a little bit of insurance to your bullpen, they were unwilling to do it that way. So I kind of agree. Floppy, the answer could be that, you know, Walker doesn't have the same level of speed where you trust him to score on a sac fly or trust him to get over on the bunt. You know, maybe that is part of the reason for it. YouTube telling me we're getting a little bit of an error on the smoothness of the stream. Hopefully we don't lose you. If we do, it's been real. We're at an hour, so I would call that a quality stream. Bradley was screaming bunt, but didn't end up giving it. MLB says the seventh best rotation, or pardon me, bullpen for the Cardinals, which, you know, I think could end up playing out that way. But with the injuries right now, I wouldn't put him that high personally. But it only is going to take a week where you go, wow, the bullpen hasn't screwed up in a while. And then everybody's going to be on board with what the bullpen looks like. Where would Hence fit into this rotation? Like right now, nowhere. But I think you just need to have the advancement of players and pitchers in that minor league system to where by August or September, you feel like one of them is capable and can jump in to be in that rotation for next year. Because you do have two guys on one-year deals that you're going to be searching for free agent starters again next year in the offseason. If you aren't able to get, you know, feeling good about Lynn and Gibson coming back for one more year, which you could do, but, you know, what's the performance going to be and et cetera, et cetera. Alex says, sorry if you answered this, but do you know why Chip was on the call tonight? It was a tough listen. Had to switch. Look, he's the play-by-play guy, and I assume he wanted to be, and so he was, right? And they made adjustments by bringing the cat into the booth and doing all the things that they did. I think that that, you know, was appropriate to handle it the way that they did, but I also can understand if people were, you know, a little put off by it. But, hey, he's a gamer doing his thing. I respect it. Right now, I've got, you know, sore throat and stuffy nose and everything, but sometimes we just – we do because it's what we do, man. Kareem, what's going on, man? Siani is the perfect reserve outfielder for this team. He should continue to be a defensive sub late in games. Yeah, I did like the way they used him tonight in that role. But I also would say I just don't know if there's going to be room for him in that role once Lars comes back. Once Snoop Barr's back, I think Siani might end up being the guy that goes. Bradley says, got Montgomery and Quintana at the deadline. That did happen one year, indeed. That is absolutely right that that did happen. Sorry, guys, for the pause. I am looking. The chat jumped on me, and I'm trying to see if I can find the update. I'm also trying to see why we're getting the darn error. Let me know, too, if you guys are saying, hey, the quality went down of the stream. That's fine. Just tell me so I'm aware of it because that helps me. Korn says, I live for the Hot Take Central crossover with B-Shafe. Yep, every Friday I'll be there. 7 to 10 on 590 The Fan with my guys Cam, the Cat, and Cole. Over time, the comp for Victor Scott will be Tim Raines. That's from Kevin. That's a huge compliment to Tim Raines. Had a pretty darn good career, but that would be nice, man. I think you'd take that. Aaron says, who do you think the Padres need for Cease at the deadline? Yeah, you know, the Padres could be looking to flip Cease if this thing doesn't turn around for them. Everyone knows I'm drinking vodka, says Kevin. No, I wish. No, it's just water, and it needs to... It's... The Stanley Cup, I said I wasn't going to give him a shout-out, but I do have one of those. It makes me drink more water. It's good. Glad to be 500 so late in the season. That's from Scott. A little bit of humor there from Scott. Hey, six games into the season. I think it's better than they did last year with a 500 record. Arenado robbed of a little oppo poke single today. He's fighting through it. I'm confident he'll find it soon. That one's also from Korn. Mariposa says Zach has to keep the velo up. Throwing 90 is not going to do it. He's no Maddox. Yeah, I'll be very closely watching the velocity from Zach Thompson tomorrow because the commentary from him after his last start was that he's working through some things mechanically. And if that's the case, it's like, all right, you would have liked to have seen him do that in spring. But if that's true, he's trying to sync some things up mechanically to get the velo back. Okay, but it does seem like it's been a number of starts dating back to spring where he had been dealing with that. So we'll be watching for that on Wednesday to see what it looks like from him. Mariposa adds, I don't mind the couple at the bottom not being high average hitters as long as their tool in the field makes it worth it. And I think in the case of those guys, it does. When you're talking about Wynn, talking about Victor Scott. And even Michael Ciani today was part of that as well. I'm going to get through a few more of these comments and then might wrap things up before the 90-minute mark tonight. Brendan says, with Gorman struggling, I like keeping Willie in the three hole. Maybe when Lars comes back, he's there. But for the time being, leave Willie there. Yeah, and I mean, tomorrow it's going to be a day game after a night game, so you may see Willie out of the lineup entirely. You may see him DH instead and have Herrera behind the plate again. We'll see. But I agree. Like, I think you can afford to have Contreras up a little bit higher when he's playing the way that he has, when he's hitting the way that he has. I don't have any issue with that. And it'll be interesting to see if Ollie does it, especially considering you have the three righties at 2-3-4 at that point. Goldie, Willie, Arenado, that's something they've sort of been trying to not do too much of, but if the shoe fits, you know, you got to wear it. Childish Scarfino, really hope we can make it to the deadline around a playoff spot and trade for an ace. Yeah, I mean, Dylan Cease would be an obvious one, right? People would ask me in the offseason, like, hey, who do you think is going to be available to trade for at the deadline for an ace pitcher? I'm like, guys, I have no idea. We don't know who's going to be bad yet. If the Padres are bad, I know they just traded for Cease, but they could flip him. They could absolutely flip him. Their GM doesn't mind making another trade. Never has. I think Cease would be a fun one. Korn is laughing at my comment on Diet Budweiser's. I can credit my father for that one. That's what my dad calls him. But anyway, all right. I think I've gotten to most of these comments. Go ahead and throw it down if I haven't answered your question because I want to make sure that I get to everybody if I haven't. But I'm at the bottom on YouTube. So Carlson has had way too many chances, according to Show Me Prodigy. I just don't think that's a fair characterization. Let's take a look at Dylan Carlson's stats, and I won't be able to put this on the screen, but I'll relay to you the info. First of all, Dylan Carlson's got a lifetime OPS plus of 99, which means he is 1% below league average. It's negligible. He's basically been a league average hitter for 1,481 MLB plate appearances. He also started in Major League Baseball at 21 years old. He was young when he first burst onto the scene and, you know, struggled a little bit, had the opportunity in 2020 with the COVID year, went back to the alternate site, came back. His rookie year basically was the age 22 when he had a 780 OPS. And yeah, that was a number of years ago at this point, 3 years ago, in fact. But that was a really good season from Dylan Carlson. We have seen him struggle against right-handed pitching since. But like, we're talking about Carlson like he's this bum. He had a good spring. He was hitting right-handed pitching, and he got hurt because of a freak incident with Jordan Walker in right center field. That's not really fair to put on Dylan Carlson. If he comes back and he struggles, that would maybe be a different conversation where you can say, look, you know, he's been having these opportunities, and I get it. It's unfortunate that the injury sort of delayed, you know, his ability to get out there and show what he's got when he was really kind of feeling it at the plate. But maybe at that point you talk about moving him at the deadline, especially if it's something where Victor Scott's playing time should be happening, but it's being impinged upon because of the presence of too many outfielders. Maybe that's a guy that you trade for a relief pitcher or put him in a package for a starter with some pitching prospects if you're really talking about trying to make a move. You know, all those things are possible. I just don't think it's, though, a fair characterization to look at it right now and say, yep, Dylan Carlson's had his chance. He's been an average hitter throughout his career. He's still a pretty young guy at 25 years old. He does play a solid outfield defensively, and he was looking good this spring coming into the season, and a bad injury that wasn't his fault ended up kind of taking some time to get over. You know, that's really all that happened there. Korn says, I was going to say, it sounded like something my dad would say too. Ace said, would you consider this series win an upset? I would not. Look, with the Padres, I didn't pick the Padres to make the playoffs. Like, that wasn't something that was part of my preseason predictions. I thought that that's just a really tough division and that they might have a little bit of a hard time getting to that point. But we also know that they're a team that is trying to do the best that it can to be around and to make the playoffs and to win 80-plus games. They underachieved last year. They changed managers. That's an opportunity for them to do more this time around. But by the same token, I just didn't think that they were going to be able to crack into that wild card mix. We'll see if they can or they can't. But that being said, if I didn't have them in my playoffs, to me, that should mean that I should be willing to think that the Cardinals should be able to beat them. So that's kind of the way I look at that. Whoops, didn't mean to click that button. Still playing around with some things here on the old deal. Let me see if I'm going to take off the video for a second just so I can have a quick breather. Just give me 1 second, guys. Yep, I promise I'm still here. Just needed a quick moment, and that's good. I played that video for a quick second. Hopefully that doesn't mess me up in any regard. I think that's safe for YouTube. I think I could still be safe to use that on YouTube, that little video that happened. Anyway, Kevin says, I knew Kittredge would be a great pickup. Wish he would have pitched more than one inning. See, I don't think that way. I think a lot of these relievers need to be one-inning guys because you can have one or the other. You can be one inning or you can be multi-inning, but you're not going to be able to go back-to-back very often at all. Kittredge is not unwilling to go multiple innings from what I understand, but tonight I don't think he needed to. I think it was perfect the way that they laid it out. You got pretty much three efficient innings from one, you know, one reliever after another, and it ended up working out to me. Carlson, as Korn mentioned, was hitting well before he got hurt in spring. Brent wants to know, when do you get worried about Walker and Gorman? Those are the guys that need to be taking the reins of the lineup from Arenado and Goldie pretty soon. I'm not worried about him yet, but if you get into, you know, a month happens and a month doesn't look good, then you go, wait, well, what's going on here? But both of them have track records. I mean, Gorman's got 2 years where he's been an above-average hitter. Walker's got one where he's an above-average hitter. I don't think suddenly these guys just stink. So give him time. It's only, you know, a week into the season at this point. And so that's kind of my thought there. Kevin, I have fantasies of seeing Victor Scott win, Edmund when he gets back, et cetera, being turned loose and becoming the kind of team that I loved all through the 80s with Coleman, Willie, Ozzy, wreaking havoc. It's a possibility that they could have a kind of a smaller version of that to go along with some guys in the middle that can hit for power. Like, there is that room to happen. I just wish they would do a little bit more of the base stealing than trying to bunt guys over and sacrificing outs. I understand the thought process behind it, but I also think, you know, it would be nice to, excuse me, to see guys be able to just kind of steal those bases themselves when you know that the skill set is there for it. Okay, we didn't quite get to 70 likes, but I do think I am about at the end of my rope and about the end of the rope on the chat. I think I've answered everybody's question. I'm at BSchaefer12 on Twitter. Send me a direct message if there was a burning question that I didn't answer from you and you would like to hear me opine on it. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. And please, there's still 84 of you in here. Hit the like button on your way out. We can get to 70. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate you for joining me. Perhaps it'll be a live stream tomorrow, but if nothing else, there will be a BSchaefer Daily podcast after the game on Wednesday. And then it'll be opening day. Maybe not as many lives during the Cardinals homestand, but we will continue to stay diligent with the podcast. So BSchaefer Daily on Spotify or Apple, or just hit subscribe on this channel. Brendan Schaefer, St. Louis Cardinals writer, and we'll have you covered the rest of the way through. It's going to be a long year, but it's going to be a fun year. Hope you guys are along for the ride with me on it. Thank you guys so much for listening, for watching, for interacting. This has been BSchaefer Daily Live, and we will talk to you next time. Peace.